The following presentation was made available by Inspiration Express as part of the Kisser Shulchan Aruch calendar program. There are many more free lectures and resources available at www.kitzer365.org. Today's lecture is given by Rabbi Micha Cohen.
Simon Kof Sadi Dalad, Dinig Isis Ushmir Sames. This simon begins the next number of simonim that deal with Hilchas Avelus, the laws of Avelus. This simon in particular deals with the laws of a geisus, of a person who's near death, Ushmiras Hames, and guarding the deceased person's body. Now, just as a sort of an introduction to the laws of Avelus, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky writes in his Haskama, in his approbation to work on Hilchas Avelus, about what the significance of Hilchas Avelus is. And he points out something that's quite interesting. In Hilchas Avelus, we find a significant number of actual halachas. Now, especially in this siman, there are some serious halachas having to do with not to hasten the death of a person. But overall, most of Hilchas Avelus has definitely halachas there as far as what a person is supposed to do. But there's also a tremendous amount of minhagim, of customs. And specifically customs that have to do with doing things for the deceased, for the neshama, for the soul of the deceased. Whether it's lighting candles, whether it's different things that were customs, very old customs that were done. And different places have a lot of different ways of doing things. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky writes that these customs are very significant for a very interesting reason. He said they're significant even though it's not an actual halacha, but because it shows our belief, our emunah, in Tchias HaMesim. In other words, the fact that as Jewish people, we look at a person that after they die, there's an Olam Haba, there's a neshama, there's a soul, and it goes up to Olam Haba. So, and that's one of the basic parts of our emunah, our belief, that there's a schar v'einish, that there's reward and punishment in the world to come. And all of those things. So these customs, even though they're only customs, but the fact that we do these things, the fact that we learn Mishnayos, let's say, for a person's memory, the fact that we light a candle, do other things that we're concerned about, show our belief in that, and therefore that itself gives it a very special characteristic. Now, there is a discussion about learning Hilchas Avelus for no reason, let's say. You know, people are concerned about it. Because it's some sort of bad omen, chas v'shalom. Now, Revozner Shlita writes in the beginning of the Tan Chelik of Shevet Alevi, a beautiful thing. He says that look at all the Gedalim, they wrote their Sfarim on the laws of Avelus, and it took them many years to write them. But the idea is that when a person is learning Torah, so Torah is the biggest source of life. So therefore, a person doesn't have to be concerned with it when they're learning the Torah, the laws of Avelus, that it should, heaven forbid, be a bad omen, because Torah, the fact that we're learning Torah, that itself is the greatest thing. Let's now begin with the first sif, Hagoisis, a person that is near death. Now, in the parentheses, the Kisser gives us a definition. Goisis, what does it mean? A Goisis, Hamala Lecha Begroinai Ipnei Tzoras Achaza, that he coughs up a liquid, fluids in his throat because of the issues he's having with his chest. And this is what's known as a death rattle, which is a person who unfortunately is not able to clear their lungs, so they sort of have this raspy sound. Now today, you know, many people are on respirators and they're suctioning. It's a little bit different, but this is the description that for hundreds of years the Chazal used to describe a person in that very late stage. V'zeh yikra samach l'misa, this is called near death. V'loshen geises, v'loshen megis v'ktera, the wording of geises is like stirring a pot. Shehalecha misapechas begroinai, that sort of this moisture is going around and around in the person's chest and throat, and because the person's so weak, they can't really clear it properly. K'may megis v'ktera, like one who stirs a pot. This is what the Taisus Yantiv explains in Erechin. Okay, so we have this person that he's, unfortunately, he or she's very close to expiring. So says the Kitzer, Hari Huka Chai L'chol Dvarav. Nonetheless, halachically speaking, the person is considered to be completely alive. Which means to say that, therefore, there's an Itzer Ritzicha. There's an Itzer to cause them to die, and there's an Itzer to hasten their death in any way. B'lachin also Liga Boy, therefore we cannot touch them. Shekol Hanageya Boy, Hari Zach Shevichthom. Because anyone who touches them is considered like they're doing murder. Why is that so? L'mad Dov Adoyma. What is this similar to? L'ner Metaftev, to a candle that's going out. Shekivin Shnege Ba'adam V'yad Nechpe. That, you know, one, a candle is strong, so even if you move it a little bit, it's not going to go out. But a candle that's weak, once you move it a little bit, it causes it to go out. So the same thing, a person who's strong, and you move them around, you know, nothing's going to happen to them. But a person in such a weakened state, so it's definitely, it could cause things to speed up, and therefore we have to be careful. Now, so we're going to discuss in a little bit what exactly does this mean, that it's Shayfech Damim. Does that mean, is that for sure? Is that just a concern? What about situations, let's say in a hospital, where they have to move one person in order to heal to someone else, or maybe for the person's own good, we need to touch them to help them, to give them some sort of care. So how does that all work? So we'll get to that in a minute. Now the Kitzer continues, V'afal pishu hu geises man arach. Even though this is going on for a while, v'yeshal targad alo l'krayvav, and even though he has a lot of pain, mikomakom also ligram shiyamos mehera, one is not allowed to cause that the person should die quickly. Kegoin lahashmit hakar v'akeses mitachtav. So what would be a way that a person could hasten the death? It would be if they would remove the pillow from under his head. Why? Why is that so? Machmas sha'ayimim, because it was a belief. Sheishin tzaitzais mikses aifis. There are certain types of feathers from certain birds. Shegarim laikav hamisa. There was a belief that a pillow with a certain type of feather in it would cause the neshama not to leave as quickly. So therefore, you want to take that away. So what about that? I lost some maftachais beisak knesses tachas raishai. Also, to put keys from the shul, which is also they had a belief that would cause the neshama to depart quicker. Kol ze aser says the kitzur one that is not permitted because you're hastening the death. But if there's something that's just holding it back, but not hastening, if there's a sound of a beating sound of like someone chopping wood or something like that, muta. So that was something that could keep the neshama from leaving. Muta lasira, that you could remove. Because you're not doing anything. You're just holding back the thing that's holding. You're just holding back the thing that's causing this problem. And again, boy, you're not actually doing something proactive. Now, I'd like to just do one more halacha and then to discuss the things that are in these two halachas. So far, what we've said is that first of all, that a geisus is considered alive, and therefore we have to be very careful not to do anything that could hasten the death, not to touch them or do anything like that. But we also said that to do something proactive that could hasten the death, we're not allowed to do. But if it's something that's just holding it back, which obviously has to be defined, then that would be different. Now, Sif Beis sort of completes this idea, and then we'll discuss it. And Sif Beis says the following: Afal b'sha asher liga b'geisus, even though one cannot touch the geisus. So mikamakam imnafal d'leika. What happens if there's a fire? So we have this geisus that's laying there. So on the one hand, we can't touch him because we don't want to hasten the death. But on the other hand, there's imminent risk of being killed by the fire. And manichan es v'bayis, we don't leave them in the house. So we remove them right away. And that's before removing svarim because it's a human being, even though they don't have a long time to live. But we definitely have to save them. Now let's go back to the first halacha. The first halacha was that when a person has the status of a geisus, they shouldn't be touched or moved. So when does a person have the status of a geisus? So this is something that the contemporary poskim can discuss, and it's sort of unclear exactly when that time is. Rav Moshe Feinstein, that's all right, But the doctors don't necessarily know because it doesn't make a difference to them. They're not so interested in that. Perhaps the Chevra Kedisha knows exactly when it is. But what does seem from here is that when a person's at the stage where the death is coming pretty quickly, that the body's shutting down, so that could already be the time of being a geisus. Now, because it's not entirely clear, so depending on how imminent, or how close to being nifter, to passing away the person is, that could determine what exactly our course of action should be. And as an example of this, Rav Ozner was asked a question about a person in the hospital, and could you move the bed because they're in the way? So Rav Ozner says that for two things. First of all, we don't know exactly when the time of a geisus is. So you have this person who, you know, things don't look so good, and the body is shutting down, and we could maybe consider them to be geisus at that point. But we have other people that we need to help. So therefore, we need to move this person because they're in the way. So Rav says, first of all, we don't know exactly if this is considered to be a geisus, number one. And number two, there's a discussion between the Shach and the Taz about removing something from the patient very gently, if that's a concern. And the Shach seems to say that if you move very gently, we're not so concerned. And the point is, when Chazal says Shayfich Damim, that when a person touches the geisus, it's like he's hastening the death. Rav Ozner understands it doesn't mean that it's for sure hastening the death. It means it could be hastening the death. So therefore, if we're not exactly sure if this person's a geisus, and we're not exactly sure if this thing could really affect the person, because he's doing it very carefully and very gently, and there's a real reason to do it, let's say because other patients over here that could that need to be cared for, so then one could do it. That's what Rav Ozner writes. And this sort of, you see in the discussion about removing the geisus on Shabbos, on Shabbos, if there's a fire, that if you're going to be actually considered to be killing the geisus, then obviously you wouldn't be allowed to do that, because why would you be allowed to kill them if there's a risk of them getting burnt by the fire? Now obviously what it means is that by you taking it out, you may cause them to die quicker, but you may not. Whereas if they're going to stay in the fire, it's more likely that they're going to die from the fire. So the point is, this prohibition of touching or moving a geisus is something that we're definitely very careful to do. I'm not to be careful about. But on the other hand, it's not 100% that any time you touch a geisus, it's considered halachically that you're hastening death. The point is just that we have to be very careful because we don't want to do anything that could hasten the death. So therefore, again, if there's anything that needs to be done for their care that's really necessary, you know, and that could be more lenient than doing things that would be moving them or touching them for no reason. Now, the Kitzur over here mentions about not doing something that will cause them to die quicker. Now, there's a lot of discussion in the contemporary Paiskim about refusing treatment that a person is terminally ill. Can the person say they don't want to be treated anymore? They don't want to go through the discomfort of the treatments. And Rav Moshe Tzal brings interesting proof from, there's a halacha that the Ran says in the Dorim that if a person goes to visit a sick person, the person is very, very ill, and there's no hope for them, so the Ran says a very surprising thing. The Ran says one should be mispal, one should daven, that they should go quickly, that they shouldn't be in pain anymore. And many points can bring this lahalacha. So Rav Moshe understands that why is it that you're supposed to daven for them? So he says, you see from there that when a person's in pain, you're not obligated to lengthen their suffering. So therefore, if a person is terminally ill, so again, that means they can't live for long, and it's just a question of prolonging the pain, it would seem from that Gemara, says Rav Moshe, that they have a right not to prolong their pain. Others are more hesitant to say that, and they bring a proof from the fact that on Shabbos, be your Machal Shabbos, even for just a few hours of life, so you see how important even a few hours of life is. So obviously this is a serious question that needs guidance, exactly when and where we say these things. You know, and also if a person is well, and something happens to them, and there's treatment that could bring them to have a good chance that there'll be a good chance that they'll be fine. So everyone agrees that that they have an obligation to do so. The only question over here is when the person's terminally ill, that's when we have this question. But if the person could definitely get better, then it would seem that everyone agrees that they're obligated to go through the treatment, because we say obviously a person wants to live, and that's the most important thing. Now the kids are also mentioned over here, the difference between causing the death to be hastened or just holding something back that's causing it to be lengthened. And there's a discussion about a person on a respirator. So without the respirator, let's say the person would not be able to breathe and they would die. And now their situation is very hopeless, and they're in a lot of pain. Are we allowed to remove them from the respirator? So, what many Paiskim view the respirator as something that's directly keeping the person alive. Their discussion really focuses around this halacha the Kitzur is bringing. If we look at the respirator as an outside device, the person is really on his own, and the respirator is helping him. So now you're going to turn off the respirator, so you're just not giving him that help. So the person's really dying on their own. However, most Paiskim don't look at it like that. They say, look, the person's on the respirator. So as of now, every minute the respirator is helping them breathe. So when you're going to take away the respirator, you're really taking away something that they're already hooked up to, that it's already part of them. So therefore, you're not just holding back something from them, you're actually taking something away. So that's why, according to an overwhelming majority of Paiskim, if a person is living on a respirator, even if they're in pain, we can't take them off. If a person's in pain, we may not be obligated to put them on in the first place. Once they're on it, to shut off the respirator, that could be much more problematic. There's another discussion in Paiskim that's brought here as well, and that is about risky treatments. Let's say if a person goes through a certain procedure, operation, there's a decent percent chance that he could survive and be well and get him through the problem. But there's a very significant risk that he could die sooner. So is he allowed to go through the treatment? So the Shvus Yaakov, one of the important Paiskim in the 1700s, so he brings a proof from the halacha that says that the reason why a person is not obligated to risk their life for someone else is because their life comes first. In other words, the case was that, let's say, a person could put themselves into a doubt that something might happen to them in order to save someone else. So I'm obligated to do that. So the Paiskim say that they're not obligated to do it because their life comes first. So the Paiskim seems to bring from over there a proof that when it has to do with the person themselves, if it's their own possibility of living a long time versus their own risk now, that their ability to live a long time takes precedence. So therefore, based on that, a person would be allowed to go into an operation that there's a significant chance that he could die from, but it has the possibility to have a full recovery. Now let's continue with Sif Gimel. Now Sif Gimel, the source of Sif Gimel seems to be more Kabbalistic, and it says, and this is again what I started off with from Yaakov Kamenetsky, that when we look at a person who's dying, we don't just look at it at an end, but we look at it something much deeper. There's something going on with the neshama, and therefore we have a lot of these types of customs that have a basis in Kabbalistic sources of how we interact with the person at this last stage of their life. And the Kitzur says the following: those that are at the bedside, of this person who is at the last stages of their life, yashkicho, they should be careful, shlayotzi shum eiver chutz lamita. The person shouldn't stick out any of their limbs from the bed. Now, what's wrong with that? So again, we don't really understand what's wrong with it, but there are, again, Kabbalistic sources why we should avoid that. As it says in the pasuk about Yaakov Avinu, the Yosef Ragel v'lamita, he sort of gathered his legs to the bed. So we see that a person's limbs should be on the bed and not sticking out. V'lachein yamidu kisoy seitzalamita. So what can you do about that? It says to put chairs or something around the bed, shlayuchel lohitzi yad regel, to prevent that from happening. Mikol malchum imloy also kein v'lohitzi. But what if the person did stick it out? So again, we have an issue of touching a geisis. So because this is only a custom, it's not so important, so therefore also liga by lachzira, it's more important not to touch the person, which could hasten death, so that we're more careful about than to keep this custom. Let's continue. Sif Dalad. Kivin shenata adam lamos. When a person is very close to passing away, ein shum adam asherli par bimenu, no one is allowed to leave from them. Why? It's considered to be not a good thing for a person to pass away by themselves. And the reason is because the soul is sort of turbulent when it leaves the body. So therefore, there's pain when the soul leaves the body, and it's sort of in turmoil, it's sort of confused, and therefore when other people are there sort of to calm the person, it's considered to be a great mitzvah. And it's a mitzvah to stay at the person's bedside when they pass away. So we learn that from a verse in Tehillim. If 10 people are there, that's even a greater merit for the soul. They shouldn't be just sitting there and talking. They should be learning Torah, reciting Tehillim, Ubashar Mizmarim, doing things that are a zchus, are a merit for the person. Masuper b'sefer Ma'aver Yabek. Ma'aver Yabek was an early sefer. Discusses a lot of these customs about the time of passing away and avelos. B'nagin l'hadlik ne'ers b'fnei ha'goyses. And there's a custom to light candles there. Now, obviously, if it's in a hospital settling, that's not really possible. But otherwise, there is a custom to do so. There's also some of a custom to light candles in the place where the person passed away. Again, if it wasn't in the hospital, after they were nifter, even after the body was removed. And again, there are a lot of various customs. Now, Sif Hay discusses determining the fact that the person is passed away. La'achar yitzias neshama, after it seems the person passed away, manichim etzel chaytmoy noitzakala. We take a light feather, v'b'enim is nan denes. And if it doesn't, not moving, so there's no breathing, v'yadua shemes. We know the person passed away. We open the windows. The idea of opening the windows is to let the soul, the neshama, leave. And the Avelim say the verse is about accepting the judgment of Kadosh Baruch Hu. Part of that is the reciting of the bracha of Baruch Dain Emes. They say it. They say it with Hashem's name. The Karen Kadin, and they tear their garments properly. Now, I'd like to make a few points on this sif. First of all, what the Kitzur is describing over here is a very, very old custom of the Chevra Kadishas, of the burial societies, where the way they would determine death would be by taking a feather, putting it by the nostrils of the person, and if the feather would move, then obviously the person is still breathing. But if there's no breathing at all, and it's completely still the feather, then you know the person died. Now, as you know today, there are many different ways of determining a person not being alive anymore. You could determine it by the pulse, you could determine it by the not breathing, or you could determine it by the not being having brain function. And the question is, halachically, what do we recognize and what do we not recognize? Now, this custom of the Chevra Kadisha shows very much that they mainly looked at breathing. Now, when would they do this test of the feather? It would be around 20 minutes after the person seemed to have died. So they waited a full 20 minutes to a half hour. They're absolutely sure that the person is in some sort of shock and they're going to come out of it. This is what their custom was. Now, what about if a person's completely stopped breathing? What about the heart? So there are references to the heart playing a role. And there's a question as far as if a heart's breathing, is that considered to be a sign of life? Now, a third possible sign would be the Mishnah Olay says, Nechtach Reisha, if the head is severed, then it shows that the person is dead. And it could be, according to that, that if the brainstem is completely dead, that could also be a way of determining death. Now, one of the most famous recent controversies was about using brainstem death to determine death, and that would have an impact on ability to give transplants, and that's obviously beyond the scope of this year. But I do want to point out one sort of interesting thing, that from the Kitzer, you see over here what the custom was. The custom was to use a feather, which is you're looking at breathing, seemingly not the heart beating, although some Pesachim, again, go with the heart as well. They're looking at the breathing, but that custom was waiting 20 minutes, so they were completely sure the breathing was finished. Now, some of the more current tests that they would use for brain death would be like the apnea test, which would test breathing only for a minute or two, because obviously more than that wouldn't be long, it would be too late. So again, that would be different than what the old custom was. The old custom was, say, 20 minutes. So again, these are some of the issues that have been raised about this. But again, it's a much broader issue than just for discussion right now. Now, that's one point as far as determining determining that the person is not alive anymore. Now, the other point over here is the Kitz describes that what happens is when a person is pronounced dead, then they say Tzedek Hadin and they tear Kriya. Now, the prevalent Ashkenaz custom is that Kriya is done at the time of the Levi, of the funeral. The reason for that is because the idea of Kriya is an expression of emotion, of grief, and the Levi is a time where people reflect and they sort of really internalize what the thing that happened, and therefore that's the time when they do it. I believe the Sfarda custom actually is to do it right after the interment, right after the person is buried, and it also has important sources, which again, and they felt that was also a certain time of sorrow. But the Kitzer over here brings the, you know, which is brought in earlier sources, which would be at the time of death. Now, there's a question. We know that we see later right here in Siv Vav that anybody who's at the bed at the time of death, they have an obligation to rent their garments. And the question, one of the reasons given why we don't tear Kriya at the time of the person actually passes away is because it might discourage people from being with the person in those last moments. You know, let's say you have a person who has no relatives, and we know the lacha is, as we've done before, that the person's not supposed to be alone. Now, this person wants to be with them, but is going to be deterred, at least in the back of their mind, because they're going to lose their shirt, they're going to lose their garment, because they're going to have to tear it. So therefore, because we don't want people to have any such feelings, therefore, the custom was changed. They should tear at the time of the funeral, and people who come there just to be with the person for the last final moments would not be obligated to render clothing. Now, this is a reason why I see people work in a hospital, let's say a doctor or hospital staff, if they don't tear their clothing. First of all, because it definitely would deter them from being so dedicated, because every time that happens, it would have to be, rip their clothing. Now, also, there's a reason brought, because for the other patients, and if the doctor's walking around looking like he's sitting Shiva, then obviously it's not going to be very encouraging for the other patients. Therefore, that also could affect him in the wrong way. Maybe even the doctor himself, he needs to be optimistic in the work that he does. So for these reasons, even though they are present at the time of a person's nifter, which is really with the main obligation to tear kriya if it's not a relative, but yet the custom is they don't do it because we don't want to deter their service to people. Let's continue with Siv Vav. As we just mentioned, everyone who's there at the time when the person passes away has an obligation to tear kriya. What is this comparable to? A sefer Torah shenisraf. A person is considered like a sefer Torah, so therefore, just like a sefer Torah that gets burned, heaven forbid, we have to rip our clothing. So too with a person. She'ain reg b'Yisrael. There's no even not an empty person among the Jewish people. Sheva Torah mitzvahs. Every Jew has some level of Torah mitzvahs. It's a beautiful concept, and therefore, every Jewish person is like a sefer Torah when they pass away. Like a sefer Torah that was, heaven forbid, burned. And therefore, there's obligation to rent your garments. But filo alkatan shalom ad mikra, even a child that just learned a little bit of chumash, al ish or a woman who may not be as knowledgeable, chayav lakraya, one has obligation to rip their clothing. Even if the person would occasionally do an avera, chayav lakraya, loved one still obligated to rip their clothes for him. But if they were used to it, then they have a more severe status. Now today, when you have people that were never brought up in Torah mitzvahs, so it could be their status would be like everybody else, that since they don't know about Torah mitzvahs, so therefore there would still be an obligation. This again is discussed in Paiskim, but this is just a thought based on what it would seem. Fine. Now, how much does a person have to rip if it's not a relative of theirs? But you're only doing it because you're there at the time of the person passing away. It's enough to just rip a little bit, even on the side, or on the bottom of the clothing, sagi, because again, it's just a little bit to show the importance of the person, but it's not an actual full obligation, so therefore that is enough. The Kitzur continues in Siv Zayin with another important custom about how to treat the person that passed away. Ma'atzimin einav shalmeis. The eyes of the person who passed away should be closed if they're open. U'mishe'ein le'banim, and a person doesn't have, u'mishe'yesh le'banim, sorry, a person who has children, yaseh zayis b'nai, there's a custom that the son should do it. Shenamar, as the pasuk says, v'yosef, v'yoshes yoda aleinecha, that Yosef put his hand on the eyes of Yaakov Avinu when he passed away. U'mishe'yesh b'char, and if it's a b'char, yaseh huzeh, he should do it. Let's continue with Sif Ches. When they remove him from the bed and put him on the floor, this is a custom as well, that for various reasons we put them on the floor. One reason could be that the bed could be still warm, so that would cause the person to decay quicker, so therefore they put them on the floor. Nonetheless, we have to be very careful about the respect to the person. The person should definitely be covered. Anything is of modesty that we do with a living person, we do with a passed away person as well, because we have to respect their modesty. Now, Sif Taz talks about a custom that's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that any uncovered water that's in the area where the person passed away needs to be spilled out. And what's the reason? So the main reason that the Shach says is because that was a way of people announcing that the person passed away without having to say it. We know the Gemara in Pesachim says that people don't want to say a bad news. It's not a good thing. So therefore, people rather would like to hint it. So therefore, the way they would hint it would be to pour out the water that was in the room, let's say, where the person passed away, or in the neighborhood. And therefore, when people would hear the water being poured, they would know that someone passed away. That would be one reason. Another reason is that it's brought more of a Kabbalistic reason that the Malach HaMavis, the angel of death, sort of puts some sort of poison in the water. So therefore, it's some sort of danger, and therefore it should be poured out. Now, the Kitzur says the following. Minig Lishpuk, call it Mayim HaShu'uvim, it's a custom to pour out all drawn water, Shabashkun HaSameis, in the neighborhood of the person who passed away. Then Rasholish Batim, Ima Bayish Asher Shom HaMeis. So basically, the house that the person passed away in, and then the two neighboring houses, Hafilu Meis Yelab Baser Shloshim Leidasai, even within 30 days of birth. Shabbos ain't Shrich Lishpuk, but on Shabbos it does not have to. Birkei Yosef, Kosov Yosef Lahachmak on Shabbos, Birkei Yosef writes to be stringent on Shabbos, but again, most Paiskim hold you don't have to. Now, the Aruch HaShulchan writes that in his areas, and I believe that today it's also pretty prevalent like that, even though, you know, it's not as common as people to pass away in a house, but still, people aren't so careful about this, and the reason the Aruch HaShulchan says is because we say Shar B'Sam Hashem, that you know these types of things, these superstitious type, supernatural type of thing, if a person is not so concerned about it, and people not so careful, then we see Hashem guards them. So therefore, if the custom is not to be so careful, then it's okay. Now, Aruch HaShulchan also makes the point that the main reason why they would pour out the water was because to let people know the person passed away. So perhaps there are other ways of letting the person pass away, but the point that Aruch HaShulchan makes is that the second reason about this idea that Malach HaMavis is putting poison in the water, that's not such a main reason. So therefore, Aruch HaShulchan was very concerned that, let's say, in his areas, very cold countries, in the winter, where people had water stored away, and they're going to start pouring out the water because someone passed away, they could be in a real danger. So Aruch HaShulchan was very strong in explaining that the supernatural reason we're not so concerned about. And the main thing is to let people know, and there are other ways of letting people know, but people shouldn't start pouring out their water when they need that water supply for different things. So again, the point is that there's definitely a custom of pouring out the water, and there's this discussions about what if it's in covered, and what if, and how many, if it's an apartment building, how many floors up, a lot of different discussions, but many people are not careful about this at all, and the reason could very well be, as Aruch HaShulchan says, because since the custom is not to be so careful, so therefore we don't have to be so concerned about it. Now, I was thinking about a hospital, which, unfortunately, that's where many people pass away today, that what about the water there? What about the water there that could be a problem based on this idea? And if we go according to the Aruch HaShulchan, it makes a lot of sense, because in the hospital, it's not appropriate for us to be telling everybody that someone passed away. That's not going to be very encouraging for the patients that are there. So therefore, that reason you don't have. And as far as the second reason of the Sakana issue, so Aruch HaShulchan is saying that we're not very concerned about that. So this is the idea of pouring the water in the area where the person passed away. Now, Sif Yud talks about the idea of guarding the meis, guarding the person that passed away. And the idea of guarding them, the Gemara says the main reason was because of the achbarim, because of the different types of rodents, and the rodents would gnaw at the bodies of a deceased person. And therefore, we don't want that to happen out of respect, and therefore, we need someone to be guarding it the whole time. It was a very common problem. These animals would come and try to chew on the body, so you needed someone, you know, 24/7 to be up, to be awake, and guarding the bodies. There are other reasons of respect of the Nifter, and maybe also Kabbalistic reasons. Now, Ramesha Zatzal writes, what if the deceased is, say, in a morgue, and we don't have this concern about these rodents gnawing at the body? So Ramesha understands that we don't have the obligation to be a shomer there 24/7, but to be yaitz of a nechnas, to be coming in and out, and just to be keeping an eye on the situation, that much we do have for the respect of the mace, perhaps so that not, you know, the body shouldn't get mixed up. So that's what he writes about the chiyuv shmirah today. Now let's see what the kitzur says. Mashaber es hameis, one who guards the one that passed away, afilu she'ena meisai, even if it's not his relative, potter mikriya shema umitvila, so he's involved in a mitzvah, and we know this is an important rule, oisik b'mitzvah, one who's involved in a mitzvah, is potter from other mitzvahs. So therefore, he's exempt, potter mikriya shema, from saying kriya shema umitvila, and from davening, with kol mitzvahs hamuris v'tar, and all positive commandments. Because one who's involved in one mitzvah, potter mitzvah cheres, is exempt from other mitzvahs. Now, if there are two people, so then they could take a shift. The other one could then go and say Kriya Shema and Davin. Let's continue with Sif Yud Aleph. The person is guarding this nifter, guarding the person that passed away, so he has to be respectful. So, and how is he respectful? Also, lechol b'cheder shamesham, he should not be eating in the room in front of the deceased, unless he has some sort of partition, even a snack, even just a fruit or some water. There were, you know, people that would dedicate themselves to watch the deceased, and it's brought also that one's allowed to take money for this. But so you should tell them that to be careful about the respect of the deceased. V'gam also levarach sham eis a bracha, one should not make a bracha there. I believe the reason is because out of respect to the deceased, because the deceased cannot do those mitzvahs anymore. Sif Yud Beis. Also letaltal sameis v'shabbos, a deceased person is muktza. It's discussed in Hilchos Shabbos. V'afilu tzarech kainim, even if it's causing a problem that kainim can't go in that area because a kohen is not allowed to be, come in contact with a dead body, or for some other mitzvah purpose, rak al yidei nachri, but a non-Jew could do it, ima krevim reitzim, if the relatives want. Actually, in the laws of Muktzah, there's a whole discussion there about if they need to move the body, could they perhaps put something on the body that would allow them to move the body. That's discussed in the laws of Muktzah. So again, these are some of the ideas that come up in the siman, which is dealing with the geisus of the person that's near death, and determining when a person's called that they've passed away, and the idea of watching and taking and respecting the deceased person's body, and the custom of pouring out the water.